Support for this podcast and the following message come from Red Bull Radio, the place to tune in and discover great music that's new to you. Whether it's the latest dance hall out of Kingston, techno from Berlin, underground hip-hop, or old soul gems, you'll know what you were looking for when you hear it. Listen at redbullradio.com for music handpicked by influential artists, journalists, and DJs, plus in-depth interviews and live performances from festivals around the globe.
It's All Songs Considered. It's a Plus One podcast. I'm here with NPR Music's Andrew Flanagan. So last week I got this article published in The Guardian from Andrew Flanagan. He's our music news editor. It was titled Feat, F-E-A-T, The Kitchen Sink, How Zayn, David Guetta, and Drake Changed Pop Credits. The article made me laugh, and it also was a bit jaw-dropping. You know how you see a song title followed by featuring so-and-so? Well, you'd think that'd be something simple, something done for decades. But these days, the way music is made, with lots of fingers and guest voices in every mix, truth is, pop naming is complicated and ego-intensive. So Andrew and I called up the author of that article. His name's Peter Robinson, and this conversation ensued. Stick with it. It gets pretty bizarre.
I've been noticing for a while that when an artist is featured on another artist's song, it's not always listed as feat or featured as it might have been a few years ago. There seems to have been an exponential growth in the types of way that people can be featured. So you might get a time sign or a cross, or you might get a plus or a with, or any of these other things. And I always sort of think that the more I find out about pop music, and you know, I'm 40 now and I'm still finding things out about it, but the more I find out, the more I realise that nothing ever really happens by accident. So you might see these things and not even really see them or take them into account, but they've all happened for a reason. So I wanted to find out what those reasons were. So a month or so ago, Zed released a new track with Liam Payne from One Direction. It was listed as Zed with Liam when I mentioned it on Twitter, and then one of my editors at The Guardian here in London spotted that, and he said, well, do you think there's anything in this? And then the smoking gun, you always need a smoking gun. There was another track which David Guetta was involved with, aptly it was called Complicated, and the track was billed as Dimitri Vegas and Like Mike versus David Guetta featuring Ciara. It felt almost like an equation that needed decoding, like who'd worked with whom and who'd come in last and who was really featured. So
let's hear a little bit of
article
this.
Was born.
That's awesome. Let's hear a bit. Please. So I'm looking at Spotify, which may be different from iTunes, Apple Music. It might be different from whatever, but the title says Complicated, parentheses, F-E-A-T, period, Ciara, end parentheses. The album is called Complicated, featuring Ciara, feat, period, Ciara. And then under artist, the list is so long it doesn't even fit on Spotify. I mean, I don't even know how you see all the names, right?
And then if you look at the artwork, you get the full horror of the whole thing. It lists it.
For the visually impaired here on the radio, tell us what is that horror? What does it look like?
The full horror is Complicated, Dimitri Vegas and Like Mike versus David Guetta featuring Ciara. Well done, everyone.
So who wrote the song?
Strangely, none of the people who were involved with this particular release wanted to speak to me for the article that I was writing. But I did speak to a few other people who'd worked, one of whom I actually had worked with David Guetta in the past.
Well, you know, if no one wants to speak to you, you're onto something.
Well, exactly. I spoke to a singer-songwriter called Bebe Rexha as part of the article, and she's she's making a name for herself, you know, as an artist herself, and that one of her first hits, she wrote the main hook for Monster by Rihanna and Eminem. But she did a track with David Guetta a couple of years ago, and that particular song, she is Hey Mama, she wrote, but she also sang the chorus in that. But when it was first released, it was credited to David Guetta and Nicki Minaj. Nicki had contributed other vocals to the track, and I spoke to her for the article, and I was going, well, how does it feel when like a DJ will back announce a track and say, well, you know, that was the new track from David Guetta and Nicki Minaj? And she was saying it's like being punched in the stomach. It's really, you know, not to be credited on a song at all when you've performed on it, and when it's your vocal on it is really hard work. And she eventually, if you kind of put this into Spotify or Apple Music now, other DSPs are available.
Digital streaming providers, yes.
Yeah. Then she will, her name now comes up. So there was some behind the scenes stuff that obviously went on post-release. But to start off with, she wasn't credited, and she said that she spoke to David Guetta about it initially, and she got the feedback back that it just wasn't going to happen. She wasn't going to get the feature credit on it. And that because she was a relative new artist, she didn't want to rock the boat and demand a credit. But, you know, getting a credit where it's due is incredibly important. So getting it splits into two different sides, I guess. On one hand, it's getting credit at all for what you've done is really important. But also there's this slightly more nuanced thing about, well, what sort of credit is it? Is it a feat or a with or a versus or any of these other different types that have popped up?
That affects their payouts, no?
There is and I'm sure both of you will know a lot more about this than I do, that there's a financial knock-on in terms of neighbouring rights, which I don't completely understand and seems very complicated, and probably is the sort of thing where if managers don't understand it, they end up getting fired by artists.
Yeah, there is an element in that.
Are either of you fully aware of this? Could you explain it to me, what the knock-on effect would be?
It totally depends song to song and the percentage that of the song that they're allocated, which may or may not have anything to do with features, widths, X's, Y's, and Z's of the credits.
I think from what I could gather from the people at labels that I spoke to for this, whether it's an ampersand or a plus or whatever, a lot of that will come down to ego and eventually karma and things like that, and just how artists want to be perceived. But there is, in the streaming era as we are now, unavoidably, there's a knock-on effect in terms of what are called primary and secondary artists. And it all comes down to how you submit a song to these digital service providers.
Because what you're doing is usually you sign up, if you're an artist, you sign up with some company that's going to help distribute it to all the other places. And in that, there is a form. And in that form, you know, it's artist, songwriter, and all that. It's in the olden days, you'd hold a 45 in your hand. And the 45 would say the name of the song, and under it, in parentheses, would say who wrote the song. Now, in some ways, it's perfect clarity there, but of course, we know people who wrote songs often weren't credited, or people who didn't write the song were credited. It was all about dividing up how they divided up the money. But it was pretty clear. And part of what happened, I think, in the digital world is we lost liner notes. We lost things like, well, where's the songwriting credit in when I look at Spotify or when I look at iTunes or you name it? And so is this kind of trying to compensate for that?
I think it might well be. I mean, it's you know, I kind of grew up there's a point for all of us where we suddenly realize that the person who's singing the song isn't necessarily the only person responsible for that song's existence. And, you know, some people it happens at the age of 9, some people at the age of 20, sometimes.
I guess sometimes it never happens.
I know. But it was very easy for most generations of music fan to figure out what was happening, because it was all there in black and white on the record sleeve. And as you say, that in the streaming era, that isn't there, which I think is actually quite harmful in a way for a lot of writers and producers. I spoke to a new artist the other day who was saying that when she was first trying to sort out what she was doing, she would buy the CD of the artist she was listening to, and then she'd look at the liner notes and contact their management. She'd, you know, find out who was the manager, and then she'd get in touch like that, and she'd find out who was writing and who was producing, and put together in her head how it all worked. And I wonder if it's quite as easy now when you're listening to a song on Spotify for that to happen. But like you say, you know, the credits of who's been involved now will appear sometimes in a variety of different ways when it comes to how a song's listed. But going back to the submission into the world of the streaming services, like you say, it's all about the metadata that you put in. And if you say that you are a primary artist, So, for example, with the Zedd and Liam Payne track that I mentioned. So Liam Payne counts as a primary artist on that. It's not something that his name isn't slightly greyed out on Spotify. If you went to his page on Spotify just after the song had been released, then that would show up as his latest release. And what's significant about that for artists is that you get two different artists' fan base both streaming each streaming that song. If Liam Payne had just been a normal feature and hadn't been listed as a primary artist on it, then Zedd would have missed out on a fair few streams from people who just went to Liam Payne's page, as well as kind of appeasing the egos of artists and featured vocalists. It also has a practical function in the streaming age, which is to make sure you get as many streams as possible.
Yeah. Bob also mentioned 45s, which is something I was curious about too when you were reporting this story. How has this changed, you know, since the era of the 45 to now? Like, was there as much backroom back and forth over these credits?
Well, I spoke to a really interesting guy called James Masterton in the UK, who's he's a huge chart expert. He does great blogs every week on what's been happening in the charts, kind of unpicks it and puts it all back together and makes sense of it. And he kind of talked me through how the function of the featuring credit has changed in purpose over the years. And for me, from what he was saying, for me, one of the main turning points was in the late 80s when the house music boom came along and producers were kind of becoming artists at the same time. Obviously, a lot of people would say, and I would agree, that producers have always been artists, but it was their name, you know, often their picture on the front of a record a lot more than it had been in the past at that point. They're becoming pop stars in their own right. But usually that would also involve getting a vocalist in. And there was, you remember that amazing Black Box track, Ride On Time, which was just based around a sample, you know, a female vocal sample. And that caused a bit of a stir, certainly in the UK at that point, because when they went on TV promoting it, it was they just got a model in to mime along to the vocals, and that seemed like they were trying to pass this off, I guess, as something that they'd done. But
this one,
what a tune!
If you pull this up on YouTube, it says, note, the lady in the video is not the actual singer. Singer in a capital S. She is lip syncing. See our official website at, and it's blackouts.edu. Got it. She looks like the singer.
Whoever that vocalist is deserves some credit. She's bringing it.
Well, that was Lolita Holloway, wasn't it? That Love Sensation is the track that was sampled on that.
Well, what's so hilarious, they could have easily fixed this by saying the person who's in this video isn't the singer. The real singer is so-and-so, but I bet they couldn't do that, so they have to send you to another website to see who the real vocalist is. It's insanity. I'm sorry.
Something Bob also was mentioning with the 45s as well was, you said when you were growing up, if the featured was the star. If it had featured, you would...
Right, whoever, if they put a feature of, you know, we'll go to the 50s, if you say Doris Day, well, she's going to be the features almost always a singer, and she was the star that they brought to the table to interpret this song, right? I'm older than you guys.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because until maybe 15 years ago, the idea of one artist collaborating with another artist, it was a real event, wasn't it? You know, whether it was, you know, George and Aretha, or whether it was Queen and Bowie or whoever, it felt like something that was special. But the whole economy of pop now is pretty much held up by artists collaborating on each other's records, which makes for an interesting kind of cross-pollination, and it makes for the division of genre boundaries more, I think, than ever before. But I don't think you necessarily get the really big wow moment quite so frequently when one artist collaborates with another.
Wait, I'm going to play this, and we're going to talk about verses, not verses ends and chorus and verses, but tell us what this is. You know? Loaded, lips and let their beats microphone. So you wrote in your article, this is MC Tunes versus VS, period, 808 State.
That apparently is the first instance of a versus being a hit in the UK anyway. And that signified two acts coming together and kind of pretty much battling over a track. But that that seemed to, the idea of versus seemed to change a bit during the 90s and in the 2000s. And it came to kind of mean when one act had remixed another act's classic song. So there was an instance in the UK anyway of a Blondie track being remixed, and it was one artist versus Blondie. Or when a U2 guitar riff was used, and it was LMC, I think, was one example. So LMC versus U2, and it kind of meant this has been more of a legal wrangling than a creative endeavor, really, I suppose. And I quite like versus. It makes it seem like quite an exciting thing has happened sometimes. But unfortunately, versus is one of those things that's fallen foul, like so many other things, of Apple and Spotify. And it just comes down to the metadata. Apparently, I was talking to a guy who's worked at a really big UK dance record label, and he was saying, well, you just couldn't use versus as an option. It was not an option to have versus when iTunes came along. So that
you mean
was,
iTunes would say to the artist, that can't be the name of your group?
I think what he was saying was that it was not an option to use versus as a way of joining two artists together on one release. It wasn't a kind of stylistic reason, or it wasn't the way of music evolving. It was just a boring metadata,
which kind of washes over.
But everything's come back to metadata eventually.
Oh, that's so depressing.
Yeah, it really is. Washing over, you know, the history of sound clashes, right? Scientist versus mad professor is one example that comes to mind.
Mm, yeah. Well, there was the big kind of mashup bootleg scene that happened at the start of the 2000s, where you had all these incredible old tracks being, you know, the instrumentals being slapped underneath other vocals, and really creative stuff happening as a result of that. And that brought verses back in a slightly different way. It was a third party just, you know, slapping two different artists together.
You mean like Wugazi or the Black Album, the Jay-Z Beatles mashup, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, but these were mainly kind of bootlegs and unofficial things. So the big hit that came out of that for me, or us here in the UK anyway, was a Sugar Babes track, Freak Like Me, which is itself was based on a bootleg. It was based on a Tubeway Army sample and an Dina Howard sample, I think. And that was two songs creating one song, which was greater than the sum of its parts, which is how it ideally would usually work. Sometimes they created something that was significantly less.
Here you go. So if you were an artist today and some famous producer came along, or singer, or someone came along, band, they came along and said, we'd love you to be on our song and we're going to write something with your name in it, in the title, what would you tell the artist they should do?
To me, increasingly suggests I've never met this person and that my vocal has just somehow, through the magic of A&R, ended up on a track. I think with is good. I think Zed had the right idea, because Zed with Liam Payne makes it seem like they're at least aware of each other's existence. I quite like with.
Love this.
Great.
I will never look at titling again the same way. So thank you, Peter.
Take care.
Cheers, my friend.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
That's Peter Robinson, who wrote an article for The Guardian called Feet, the Kitchen Sink, How Zayn, Dave Guetta, and Drake Changed Pop Credits. I'm Bob Boylan, along with Andrew Flanagan for NPR Music. It's All Songs Considered.